Welcome to Lady Killers, a podcast about female serial killers. I am your host, Abraham Archambault. Let's go dig up some bodies. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another week's episode here of Lady Killers. I am your host, Abraham Archambault, and it is good to be back for another week. Hopefully you're all doing great out there, as good as you possibly can during these historic times that we're living through here. We're coming to you from the Pacific Northwest, and we're kind of going through a heat wave here, so, barreling down summer here, and I think we might have a little reprieve later this week. Maybe a little bit of rain is in the forecast, what we need. So hopefully we have a good week here, and I hope you all have a good week too. I was talking last week about Portland and all those federal agents that have been menacing the city. Apparently they've reached a deal, and they're out of there. So that should make things a little bit better in the city of Portland. I mean, the protesting will still continue because there are important issues that are being dealt with right now. But hopefully they will be peaceful and not have to worry about being blindfolded or kidnapped by these federal menaces that were running around. They could be in your city right now as we speak, and we don't want them. We don't need them. We need them out of our cities, which would be a huge step in the right direction. So hopefully those cowards are leaving the cities, and we still do have to deal with this COVID-19 that's going around. It's claimed over 150,000 of us in this country here. So while that's going on, we just, we need to stay together, folks. We just need to keep helping each other out and keep following the guidelines for social distancing and staying healthy out there. Wash those hands. But I know you didn't come here, as I've said before. You didn't come here for, what's floating around up in my noggin up here. You came here for a true crime podcast. If you've never listened to this podcast before, it's a weekly podcast where we will delve into some murders that women have committed. These women we like to call lady killers. And I highly recommend starting from the beginning of this podcast for the first episode, if you haven't yet. It'll get you kind of acclimated in how we do things around here and kind of just set you up to kind of get into the flow of things here. What we do plan for this podcast is trying to work our way through each and every one of our states in our union here, all 50 states, and pick a lady killer from each one of those states, and we'll discuss those murders that they committed. And as of now, we're coming towards the end of season one here. What I'm trying to do is, 15, 16 episodes a season, try to work our way through all 50 states, and I guess we got about a month left here, probably four or five more episodes before we take a little break. With school coming up, I'm going to be needing to stay at home and homeschool the children, and it's a very important time right now, and children still need to get that education, so I will be devoting a lot of time to that, and this will have to take a little break. I'll still be working on it, but I give it a couple months maybe before we return with season two. At any rate, let's go ahead and move on to who our lady killer for the week is. This week's lady killer managed to destroy many, many lives down in the state of Nevada, which is what I have chosen for this week. We are continuing our analysis of the women of the West, which just kind of happened naturally by itself. So if you're ready to take a trip back to the old 70s and 80s down in Nevada, and let's go on this trip. Follow me. We're going to delve into the murderous ways of Priscilla Ford, our lady killer for this week. Priscilla Joyce Ford was born on February 10th, 1929 in Berrien Springs, Michigan, which is a very small town known for its Seventh-day Adventist community. Now, that church, Seventh-day Adventist, my dad was from that particular church. He wasn't a particular pleasant guy, so That's all I'll say about that particular church. During the last census in the town, there was less than 2,000 people that were estimated to be living there. And when I checked even more recently, it seems like even less people live there today. To give you an idea where that actual town is located, it's about a two-hour drive from Chicago. There wasn't much happening in the town at the time of Priscilla's birth. The only tidbit of info that I actually even found remotely interesting is that Muhammad Ali once owned a home in that town. And that's about it coming out of that town. As with many of our lady killers, not much was found out about her early life. She only really appeared on the map around 1957 when she was hired on as a teacher at a little one-room school in Dowagiac, Michigan. Hopefully I'm pronouncing that correctly for you that are from there. Let me know how you do pronounce it if I am incorrect there. She was hired on with no college education whatsoever or any teaching experience at all. This kind of made the school board officials a little nervous about her actual teaching abilities. Also, the fact that she was the first black teacher in the town was a pretty huge issue that came up, and they really had to deal with that. But, you know, she did have a high school diploma, and it was said that she had that an IQ of 140. And after seeing how adept Priscilla was as a teacher, the board emitted a collective sigh among themselves. They kind of relaxed and let her do her thing. And she taught at that one-room schoolhouse for over 7 years. And she would eventually obtain her bachelor's degree in education in 1966. There was another event that happened back in 1957 when she became a teacher. I looked all over for more information about it. And all I could find is she shot her second husband in self-defense before turning the gun on herself. I just found it strange I couldn't find more information about this shooting. But obviously she survived the shooting, or else we wouldn't be discussing the terrible deed that she performed in 1980 that we're about to learn about. Things started to take a dramatic turn for Priscilla Ford in 1970. She found herself living in Buffalo, New York. And this is when her family reported that her behavior had become very odd. She started claiming to see her dead husband's ghost stalking her from across the street. So here we go. We've already, as with some of our other lady killers, hallucinations, spirits in the air, starting to overtake their mind a little bit here. Because she also claimed that she had the souls of Adam and Jesus Christ inside of her. And like I said, here we go. If I forgot to mention to you guys out there, this is another episode of Lady Killers, so let the fun begin. Most of our episodes, they're not complete unless there's a crazed religious fanatic claiming to house the souls of some prominent biblical figures or trying to exorcise demons from within a 2-month-old infant, as we've heard in the past. It's Lady Killers. Let's do this. So 2 years later, in 1972, Priscilla's son returned home from the army, and he immediately went to some of his other family members around, claiming how delusional she was and that she slowly was becoming a raging alcoholic. In 1973, Priscilla Ford had moved to Reno, Nevada for a change of scenery, and then she soon found out that she couldn't handle the real world at all, and she checked herself into the Nevada Mental Health Institute. Here she is evaluated, treated, and released pretty quickly. The final verdict from the doctors there is that she suffered from a passive-aggressive personality with occasional hysterical episodes. Now, people with this affliction usually express their negative feelings through actions rather than just kind of trying to deal with them head-on and trying to talk them out. She held a very pessimistic view on life, which people with this disorder have, and they usually lash out aggressively when they can't get their point across. And the best example that I can come up with for this is, let's say we got two people, which happens with couples all the time, trying to decide which restaurant they want to go eat out at. So person A picks the restaurant, which person B hates that restaurant, but they don't voice their opinion until they actually get to the restaurant. And that's when person B starts to make the experience completely miserable. They lash out at the restaurant. They nitpick every little detail. They give their server a hard time. They're loud, obnoxious. Instead of just before they went out saying they didn't like that restaurant, they didn't want to go, they just keep it inside, let it boil up until it just explodes out aggressively and negatively out into the ether. Now, if you just add in the occasional hysterical episode, and now you have our lady killer for this week, Priscilla Ford, and her mindset. The following year, in 1974, Priscilla was arrested for trespassing and assault, and she was sent back to a hospital for another evaluation. And before this, I believe around 1963, Priscilla had given birth to a daughter by the name of Winter Scott. This, I really couldn't find much information surrounding this birth, but kind of looked like her and her daughter bounced around frequently between Buffalo, New York, all around Michigan, and Reno, Nevada. Through this all, Priscilla, like I said, she had a son that went to the Army. She had two sons, actually, and was married twice as well by this point. I just couldn't find too much information about this, but the way things were going, I mean, she looked like she was a mother just really trying to find her place in the world and find where she needed to be. You know, she had lost a few jobs along the way. And according to her, she lost those jobs because she was forced to work with black people, which she said she hated black people, but she herself was black, so not sure where that anger and hostility came from. That's probably something for the psychologists and all of you out there. At this time, social services, they were concerned for her daughter, Winter Scott, and she had her removed from Priscilla's custody. And this was after she was arrested for the assault and the, you know, trespassing incident that she participated in. So her daughter, Winter, was sent to live at the Wittenberg Hall in Washoe County. And that's a secure juvenile holding facility for young offenders. Didn't find any illegal activities on Winter's part, and I think she was actually placed there kind of in holding while they're figuring out what to do with Priscilla. Because Winter didn't do anything wrong. It was all her mom that was committing all the crimes. So I think they were just trying to figure out what to do with Priscilla and then move forward from there. Now, since Winter was taken away from Priscilla, she, in her mind, thought that her daughter had been kidnapped. In reality, they ended up placing her in a foster home, which was for her own protection from her own mother. Social services had tried to contact Priscilla on many occasions to let her know that they had taken her and put her into a foster home, but they couldn't locate Priscilla ever. And for some reason, Priscilla Ford headed back to Buffalo, New York, and there she was seeking out assistance from the Catholic Charities organizations there, and I'm not sure how much assistance they provided, but some of the nuns claimed that Priscilla was delusional. They had a hard time dealing with her. So over the next few years, Priscilla, she would find herself in a mental institute in Blackfoot, Idaho, as well as back in Buffalo, New York. And that's where she was actually finally declared a paranoid schizophrenic with violent tendencies. And that was in 1979. By this point, she had been treated and released by at least 7 mental institutes around the country. By May of 1980, Priscilla found herself living way up in Maine, still searching for her kidnapped daughter, according to her, still thinking she was kidnapped because social services still couldn't locate her and let her know her daughter was doing fine living with a foster family. So Priscilla hired some lawyers up in Maine to help find her daughter, Winter. She told the lawyers that if she didn't get some sort of help finding Winter, she was just going to drive across the state and basically kill everybody she saw along the way, is how she had put it. She didn't do as promised, but instead she got fed up how things were moving so slowly along up in Maine there, and she just decided to hit the road in November. And that's 1980, early November 1980. And as she's driving out west, she basically set her sights on San Francisco, that's where she was wanting to go. And as she was passing through Reno, she had a check that she needed cashing. So she decided to stop off in Reno and cash that check. While doing so, she fell in love with the city and she decided to stay. She got a job at Macy's as a package wrapper for the forthcoming holiday season. So she had a temporary seasonal job at the mall, and she actually would never make it out to San Francisco. So on November 27th, 1980, we are looking at Thanksgiving Day in Reno. And it was a nice day for Reno during that time of year. It was 47 degrees out, which is pretty warm for a Thanksgiving in Reno. It was a pretty nice day for people to walk around on the strip there in Reno, check out the sights, do a little gambling, maybe get a little Thanksgiving dinner if you don't want to cook one for yourself at home. I had a brother that lived in Vegas, and that was kind of the thing. If he could never come travel and see us for Thanksgiving, there's plenty of places in those casinos to get a Thanksgiving meal. And so people were out doing that on this Thanksgiving day. And the 51-year-old Priscilla Ford, she donned a black cape and she hopped into her 1974 Lincoln Continental, headed out into the streets. She had been boozing it up pretty good for most of the morning and into the afternoon, drinking some white wine. And her head was just swirling with alcohol and the voices of Adam and Jesus Christ. And in her mind, she said she was filled with the Holy Spirit and ready to go out and face the world. Her Seventh-day Adventist upbringing that she had taught her that the Holy Spirit was like the feminist branch of the Holy Trinity. So you had the Father, the Son, and Priscilla Ford, basically, is what she was saying the Holy Trinity consisted of. And if she truly believed that she was Jesus Christ incarnate, then that would mean she believed to be possessing two-thirds of the Holy Trinity inside her body. So you take that, the delusions in her head, she's two-thirds of the Holy Trinity, and she has the blood alcohol level of 0.162, which today is twice the legal limit in most states. So there she is, filled with all these thoughts in her head, these voices in her head, plus double the legal limit to drive with alcohol in your system. And now you know what the mindset of Priscilla was as she heads out into the busy Reno streets. At the corner of 2nd and Virginia, Priscilla decided to hop the curb and take her Lincoln Continental for a cruise down the sidewalk, exceeding 40 miles an hour in that car. She flew down the sidewalk, the casino's just a blur outside her windows as she clipped innocent bystanders, sending them bouncing from this hulking mass of a car. She never slowed down as she barreled straight down that sidewalk, through crosswalk after crosswalk. She made it about 5 blocks, taking people out with this tank of a car, this Lincoln Continental. Those things, those were huge, they were beasts. I had a town car around that age, and this thing, we drove in it. It was like being on the ocean on a boat. It was just this massive, massive tank. And she's cruising 40 miles an hour down a sidewalk, clipping people, taking them out as she's going, until she finally came to stop at a red light. So following the rules of the road, stopping at the red light, just acting like it was a normal day in Reno, you know. But this was not a normal day at all, especially for those citizens. 5 people were already dead, and many more were lying on the sidewalk and in the gutters, bleeding and dying on this Thanksgiving day that started out so pleasant and peaceful for these people, until Priscilla Ford decided to introduce herself to them. Some people were saying they saw body parts in the street. Others said a man actually clutched onto the hood of Priscilla's Lincoln Continental, holding on for dear life as long as he possibly could, until he was just launched off and he bounced off the pavement like a rag doll, they said. There were witnesses everywhere, so there was no shortage of people to point the finger at Priscilla during this whole thing. They saw this crazed maniac slicing her way through the Reno crowd. One woman couldn't have painted the picture better when she came forward and said, quote, "It looked as though someone had gone through the streets with a lawnmower, mowing people down. It looked like a battlefield. There were bodies all over the place," end quote. And all the while, it was said that through this whole massacre, Priscilla, she just kept searching the area, looking around, darting her eyes, trying to find another victim to plow over. When the cops finally arrived, they said it was like arriving at the aftermath of a horrible massacre on a battlefield during wartime. So even the witnesses said that it looked like a war zone, a battlefield, and the cops kind of confirmed this story when they arrived on scene. One of the arresting officers said, quote, "It was a fucking war zone," end quote. Body parts were strewn about it like it was indeed a battlefield. In total, 24 people had to be rushed to the hospitals in the area, and it left at least 7 dead after she had done her damage there. The cops who confronted Priscilla said she just sat there calmly and allowed them to take her into custody without any incident at all. She didn't raise a scene, nothing. She just sat there calmly. I guess she just spoke nonchalantly about everything that had happened there. She asked one of the nearby officers that were there during her arrest, by the name of Officer Oakes. She said, quote, "How many people did I kill?" Oakes told her it was about 5 or 6, and Priscilla said, quote, "Good." And this Officer Oakes said she spoke in this matter-of-fact tone that just chilled him to the bone, and he had never gotten over that. Just the way that she delivered these lines, like nothing happened. Like she was just reading you a story from a book there. She knew exactly who she was, what she had done, and she didn't even flinch or bat an eye at what she had done. She pretended like it was all something very normal, when in fact it was a massacre. And apparently that, her demeanor, is what frightened many of the seasoned veterans of the Reno Police Department. It was just how calm she was and calculated through everything. She knew exactly what was going on. I don't know how she remained so calm with all those voices running through her head, but they said she was so calm and cool and collected through it all. After the police had Priscilla inside the police station, they conducted a blood test to see how much alcohol was in her system at the time of this massacre. And as she waited, and as they were all waiting for these results to come back, she was quoted as saying, quote, "The more dead, the better." And this would just totally stun police officers, who they said had never witnessed anything remotely close to this before. But they let her run her mouth. They let her spill her guts out there, and she continued doing so. And she was heard saying, quote, "I deliberately planned to get as many as possible. A Lincoln Continental can do a lot of damage, can't it?" End quote. That just made everybody that was in the room at that time shivered with fear when they heard that. They were in the presence of pure evil. She claimed she possessed the spirit of Jesus Christ, but this atrocity was not even close to any Christ-like actions that I've read about, or that anybody was taught to emulate in church. Definitely not plowing down 30 people in the streets of Reno. So as Priscilla sat in her holding cell, officers just, they ran it all through their heads trying to grasp what the hell even happened. Why did it happen? Nobody had any clue what was happening. What could cause someone to commit such a heinous act? And not only that, but how could she, after doing this, she just sit there so callous, just numb, as if it was her personal duty to massacre all these people? They prodded Priscilla forward with questions, and she answered each and every one so nonchalantly that it just continued to send these shivers up everyone's spines that were there. So Priscilla let them all know that earlier that summer, quote, "A voice told me to drive through a crowd at a theater and kill as many as possible," end quote. She would then counter that with another voice that she said she had heard, and that was the voice of Senator Edward Kennedy's wife, Joan. This voice advised her against the massacre, telling Priscilla that she was, quote, "too much of a lady to do it," end quote. So here we have this lady clearly suffering a horrible mental collapse in front of everyone, but seeming like she was having a normal everyday conversation at the same time. So she was telling everybody about all these voices in her head. I don't know, acting like it was just an everyday occurrence, what had just happened. All these voices swirling around in her head, she was trying to get them out, but unfortunately, this conversation was just with herself and all the myriad of voices that were swimming around inside her mind, so none of this was real to other people. It was only real to Priscilla up in her head, and they, you know, everybody in the room, everybody there present was trying to figure this out, wrap their head around how she could do this. In her mind, though, she's having these conversations with multiple voices, and it's all normal to her. So now we have Priscilla Ford sitting in jail awaiting her trial. This all happened at the end of November, at Thanksgiving time, and she would sit in her cell until she was deemed incompetent to stand trial on January 29th, 1981. She was then sent away to Lakes Crossing for mental treatment. Lakes Crossing is a maximum security psychiatric facility located outside Reno in Sparks, Nevada. And there she underwent testing and evaluation, as well as some drug therapy. And by August 4th, 1981, Lakes Crossing deemed Priscilla competent enough to stand trial. So she was sent back to her jail cell in Reno to await the trial. So basically they're saying, after the barrage of drugs that they had given her, her mind is now clear and ready to stand trial. So nearly 1 year since this horrible massacre on the streets of Reno, on November 12, 1981, Priscilla would enter the court to begin her trial, where she was being charged for the death of six people and the attempt on the lives of at least 23 others. Now, I had mentioned earlier seven people had died during this attack. For some reason, she was only being charged with six. Now, this had something to do, I don't know, there were some small, minute details. I have no idea how it works sometimes in the court system. I tried to read it and understand it, but it had something to do with how the murder indictment was presented initially as six, and then someone died from their injuries later. I don't know, but she was only charged with the six murders. Maybe one of you lawyers out there can clarify this for me, how it all worked, but at any rate, she was being charged for six murders and attempted murder of 23 others. And like I said earlier, there was definitely no shortages of witnesses to testify against her during the trial. Not one person was saying that she wasn't the one driving this tank down the sidewalk. They all immediately pointed the finger at Priscilla and called for her blood. It appeared to be an open and shut case for the prosecution, but that definitely wasn't the issue at hand. The issue that they were really kind of grappling with and trying to figure out was, what the hell was her motive in this whole case? What would cause a seemingly normal woman with an IQ of 140 who used to be a teacher, what would cause somebody like this to barrel down a sidewalk in a giant metal beast, picking off people one by one? Many motives were established by the prosecution, and each one became crazier and crazier as the trial progressed. They started to dig into her past to try and reveal any indication as to why she would bring this wrath down on the people of Reno. They called her family. They called all past acquaintances to the stand to try to shed some light on Priscilla's personality and whether or not she had displayed violent tendencies in the past or talked about it at all. And all this did was confuse people even more, as they still couldn't figure out if Priscilla truly knew the difference between right and wrong. Priscilla's attorneys, as expected, entered a plea of not guilty by reason of insanity. This plea, it rarely ever ends up in success in court. The defense usually doesn't win on this front, because a lot of defense attorneys tell their clients to do this, and then all they do is pretend to be a crazy person on stand. It just never works out. But all the comments that Priscilla had made right after the murders, they were brought up again in court. And, you know, she knew her particular type of vehicle was just a beast, and she knew the hefty amount of damage that it could wreak on the people of Reno, and that's what she was aiming to do, and they had proof of this. So if you've forgotten, she said the more dead the better pretty much right after this happened, and when she was trying to explain why she did what she did, she also on the stand said, quote, "I'm a New York teacher. I'm tired of life. I want attention. I'm sick of problems," end quote. This doesn't sound like the mind of a madwoman. It sounds like a woman who just couldn't handle the stresses of life anymore, and she finally snapped. But then they moved on to the voices in her head. This is a little bit different story. It's almost as if she had that proverbial angel and devil on her shoulder, you know, as she was contemplating whether or not to execute those innocent people of Reno. You know, on one shoulder, she had this voice telling her that these people deserved to die. For some reason, this was the souls of Adam and Jesus Christ telling her to do this. While on the other shoulder, she had Joan Kennedy, this, you know, Senator Edward Kennedy's wife. And apparently she was the voice of reason for Priscilla, you know. She was trying to keep Priscilla from committing this horrible act on society. But Priscilla went against that cooler head and that calm voice of Joan Kennedy, and she decided to go the murder route instead. Another interesting fact came out during the trial, and that was, you know, Priscilla Ford's terrible obsession with the television personality Barbara Walters. And it was made clear somewhere along the trial that Priscilla absolutely despised Barbara Walters, and she called her a beast. It also came out that Priscilla had sued the Seventh-day Adventist Church, as well as the Mormon Church, for $500 million. Because she claimed they could not preach the Word of God, since she was, quote, America's only authorized divinity, end quote. So as much of this information kept coming out into the open, her plea of not guilty by reason of insanity started to make a little bit more sense for people, because she was all over the place. This is also where she brought up the issue of her thinking her daughter was kidnapped years before all of this happened. She tried using that as the reason for all the murders, trying to draw attention to her plight, she said. She figured by committing this mass killing spree, it would garner enough attention to help find whoever had kidnapped her daughter about 7 years earlier. Of course, it finally came out that nobody had kidnapped her daughter, and that her daughter Winter had been taken from Priscilla when she was arrested for that assault and trespassing back in the early 70s. Authorities had tried contacting Priscilla on many occasions, and they just couldn't locate her. So, you know, this all turned out to be a lie, since there was proof that Priscilla, in fact, did know the whereabouts of her daughter. She knew that she had some relatives down in the L.A. area that were taking care of Winter. So this whole idea that somebody had kidnapped her daughter and she had no idea the whereabouts of her daughter, it was all fictitious as well, something that she just created in her head along with all those other voices that were just racing through her mind. As the trial progressed, Priscilla continued to make up excuses and reasons for this killing spree that she had gone on. She then said the car malfunctioned and it was basically out of control as it was racing down the sidewalks of Reno. Bodies were just bouncing off it like little bugs on a road trip. And this was all because the car was just had a mind of its own. It was out of control. Unfortunately, this story was hard to believe after all the things that she had said and after she had already admitted to killing those people on purpose. She was noted as saying that the people she killed were, quote, just pigs, animals let out in a wild place, end quote. And this just, I keep going back to that quote that she had made where she said, the more dead, the better. That doesn't sound like a malfunctioning vehicle to me. That sounds like a person who knew exactly what they were doing at the time. And it was because of the way that she flip-flopped around like that that they continued to bring in these medical experts trying to diagnose Priscilla, trying to find out if there actually, is there a scientific reason she did this? And many terms were thrown around by all these experts during the trial. Terms like paranoid schizophrenia with religious delusions and paranoid psychosis. They also even dug up that case back in 1957 where she had shot her second husband and then turned the gun on herself. Back then, she wasn't charged with anything because it was found that she had acted in self-defense. But even with all this testimony from the medical experts, they came to the consensus that she was not faking being crazy. She was indeed a very sick woman that needed medical help on a daily basis. But it was all going to come down to whether or not Priscilla knew that what she had done on that Thanksgiving day in 1980 was wrong. So at this point, it's kind of evident that Priscilla was insane, if you will, but was she incompetent? Those are two vastly different qualifiers, because one could be totally incompetent, not even understand what's happening, but they still wouldn't believe that they're Jesus Christ. One of the quotes that she had made on the stand probably helped in her defense for the insanity plea, because she said, quote, I am human and I am divine. I don't like it any more than anyone else does. I don't want to be divine. End quote. And I don't know. I think when you claim you are God and you truly believe it, I would consider that insanity. And she 100% believed she was God. And she said she didn't want to be God, but she was God. And that's just the situation she was born into. And that's what Jesus Christ said in the Bible too, as before he died, before he was murdered. That's what he said, you know. He said, if only this could just go away. He didn't want to be God anymore. And this is what Priscilla was saying up on the stand almost every day. Another witness that had a huge impact in this trial was Priscilla's own daughter, Winter Scott. Yes, the same daughter that Priscilla had claimed was kidnapped 7 years prior. And yes, that same daughter Priscilla claimed to have been trying to bring out of confinement by killing all those people down on Virginia. So Winter Scott's testimony just added onto the mounting evidence in favor of this insanity plea. Winter told the court that around the age of 9 was the first time that Priscilla showed her how to smoke marijuana, a 9-year-old kid. Winter also told the court that her mother would claim from time to time that she was a divine entity, and that Winter also carried this sacred holy blood, that it was coursing through her veins as well. And Winter would always become scared and confused because Priscilla would tell her that she was going to give birth to the next Messiah. So you have this little girl being given marijuana at the age of 9 and then telling her, you know, one day you're going to give birth to the Messiah. But apparently Priscilla was planning on having Winter artificially inseminated, so this would prove a virgin birth and the return of the Messiah. And this just clearly sounds like the muddled mind of someone completely out of touch with reality. And it was confirmed by Winter's aunt. She said, yeah, Priscilla used to say this. She was going to have her artificially inseminated so she could give birth to the Messiah. And it would be a virgin birth because, you know, she had never been with a man. So she's just, I don't know, just all these things that she's plotting, all these things running through her mind. I mean, clearly it shows that she's very mentally ill, but still, it doesn't really prove whether she knew what right from wrong was, you know, when she went on that rampage. But the jury would decide that for everyone when they came back after 13 hours of deliberation. They found Priscilla guilty of the murder of 6 people and the attempted murder of 23 others. And now that they had the verdict in, how were they going to decide her fate? Would it be death in the gas chamber? Or would Priscilla spend the rest of her life locked away from society, unable to exact her vengeance on the world? It took another 9 days of deliberating for the jury to come up with Priscilla Ford's sentence. And that would have been on March 28th, 1982. Priscilla Ford was sentenced to death in the Nevada State Gas Chamber. During all of this, Priscilla continued to assure everyone that she was sane during the spree killing back in Thanksgiving in 1980. She wanted, quote, to be left alone to die in peace, end quote. She welcomed her death sentence, but the state has to review all death sentences that come across just to ensure that they're, you know, an adequate punishment. And 4 years later, they were still debating whether or not, you know, the death sentence was a proper solution for Priscilla. The prosecution claimed they still would have sought the death penalty no matter what. It wasn't just to watch someone die for the crimes they had committed. It was to ensure that Priscilla Ford would never see the light of day again and inflict any more harm on society. The prosecution claimed that most people that are on death row never even see the gas chamber. They never even die. They just sit there. They live out their entire existence in isolation. And that's right exactly where he wanted Priscilla Ford. He wanted her isolated. He didn't want her any chance of her being free again. The prosecution feared that if Priscilla would have been sent to a mental institute, she probably would have gotten out when that hospital became full, when they needed to, you know, cull some of those patients and release them to, you know, make way for the newcomers that would be coming in. My mom used to work in that field. She worked in a facility that was similar to a mental institute, And she said, yeah, stuff like that happened all the time. I mean, violent patients would be discharged just because they simply didn't have room for everybody. They would just be let out into society and, you know, just brush their history under the rug and put them out into the city. And that's the city I grew up in with a bunch of those people walking around. So, you know, that happens. And that's what the prosecution was afraid of, that Priscilla would just be kind of just turned back to society, let loose again. So that's why they were going after the death penalty, to keep her locked up forever. By 2003, Priscilla Ford had avoided at least 5 executions due to this whole thing being tied up in appeals and sanity hearings. And all of the appeals and hearings were unsuccessful because the court stated she was put on trial, convicted, and she was sentenced fairly and accordingly. And I couldn't agree more. I mean, she did it. She admitted to it. She planned it out. She knew what she was doing. She knows right from wrong, so she deserves the sentence that she got. I know many of you out there probably beg to differ. And I know mental illness is a very touchy topic. You might think that she was mentally insane, or that the voices in her head just simply weren't her fault. It was something that she should have been locked up in a hospital for instead of rotting away on death row. And I get that. You know, everyone deserves a fair shot, right? I think she definitely had some mental issues, but the doctors claimed that it all went away whenever she would be on the proper medication. That's the reason that she was deemed competent to stand trial. But she refused to take her medication, and the result of that was that fateful day in 1980. And I know a couple people that suffer, you know, similar disorder as Priscilla Ford. But the people I know that suffer, it's a little less religious. There's no talk of being Jesus Christ or being incapable of sin or anything like that. But there are multiple voices involved, and they have told them to do things that shouldn't be done before. And the only thing that quells these voices in these people that I know, and all these thoughts that run through their heads, is medication. And when it's administered correctly and actually taken as prescribed, the medicine works. Priscilla chose not to take the medicine. This medicine would have eliminated these thoughts and voices that were running through her head. And she just decided to let all this craziness swirling around in her mind, she decided to let it just overtake her entire being and become the devil that would eventually kill 7 people and badly injure 23 others, ruining their life in the process. On January 29th, 2005, Priscilla Ford died inside the Southern Nevada Women's Correctional Center in North Las Vegas, Nevada. She was 75 years old. Priscilla Ford was known to be a heavy smoker throughout her life, so it was no surprise when she died due to complications from emphysema. After the atrocious act that she had committed on Thanksgiving Day in 1980, I think she lived much too long, if you ask me. But everybody's going to have their opinion on this matter, I'm sure. Was she mentally ill, and should she have been in a mental institute? Or did she know exactly what she was doing during this whole thing? I don't know. We'll never know. She has passed on. Nobody will be able to interview her again and to see exactly, you know, her mindset at the time. But from all accounts and from all stories, she knew what she was doing. She said she just wanted to be locked up. She wanted to be killed for what she did. I don't know. She never really showed remorse for it. She just said she did what she had to do as God. So you be the judge. And that is the case of Priscilla Ford, our lady killer for this week, representing the state of Nevada. I want to thank you all for listening this week. Please send any comments or questions to the email address for this podcast, which is theladykillerspod@gmail.com. Also, sometimes it's a little tough to find the perfect lady killer for the week for this podcast. So if there's anybody out there that knows of a lady killer that you would like me to discuss on an upcoming episode, just go ahead and send me an email, let me know, and I'll dig into that. You probably have better insight than I do, being from the area where maybe a specific murder had happened or a few murders from a woman has happened. So let me know what you think, and we can dig into that and find something out. Our production website is 1129productions.com. You can visit that for any updates on the podcast, as well as any news and updates on Loon Lake. And that screenplay for Loon Lake is still available for purchase on Amazon. I'll leave all this information in the notes for this podcast as well. And also, if you feel like contributing to the podcast, you can follow the link that will be provided in the notes as well. And I want to let everybody know it is very, very much appreciated whenever somebody donates. I don't take it lightly. It is amazing. But regardless of whether anyone contributes or not, this podcast will remain free for your enjoyment. So there you have it, I guess. Another episode in the books. So now we can check off Nevada from the list of states. I don't know what to say at this point. I mean, I know that things are starting to get a little wacky out there during this horrid pandemic, but please continue to take care of each other out there. I've said it before, and I will say it again. Hate does not have a home here in America. So knock that shit off, whoever is perpetrating that hate. We need to practice love and compassion more than ever right now. It's the only thing that will defeat all the hate that is out there. Please continue to social distance. Wash those hands, wear that mask whenever you're out and about. It's the best way to help us contain this virus right now, and I think it's the only way that's going to point us in the right direction. If you haven't said hello to a neighbor lately, now is a great time to do so. Make sure they're holding up okay. And if your neighbors or friends, anybody, if they're okay with accepting some items from you, maybe you can bake them a cake, bake them a pie or some cookies. Trust me, it will make their day. I promise you. Last week, before I ended the episode, I left you with a quote from Gandhi. And it made me feel better. I hope it made you feel better as well. And I think from now on, I want to just end each of these episodes in a similar fashion. This week, I thought I would leave you with a quote from Nelson Mandela. Seems very appropriate for today and even living on into the future. Mandela said, quote, "No one is born hating another person because of the color of his skin or his background or his religion. People must learn to hate. And if they can learn to hate, they can be taught to love. For love comes more naturally to the human heart than its opposite." End quote. Stay safe, friends. I am your grateful host, Abraham Archambault. I hope you have sweet dreams.